Welcome to our final presentation for the first chapter of Business 123, Introduction to Investments. And in this presentation, we will run through the short-term investments, the investments that we park our money, where we park our money, where it we don't want it to go down. We want it to be safe. This is we're looking for safety of principal. And these things are not that difficult to understand. They're not that difficult to deal with. They're pretty straightforward. So let's get them out of the way. Let's review them. And then, you know, we can, as we go through the more riskier investments, we can always compare those riskier investments with the short-term investments as a way of saying, well, look, you know, if you're really worried about this, or stocks or bonds or whatever, you can always put your money in the bank, realizing that you're not going to make any money. So let's get started on slide 55, short-term investments. To review, we know that these are often called cash or short-term vehicles or short-term instruments. And as we said, the time frame is usually up to a year or so, depending on the need and the priority. If this is money we need in 6 months, a year, maybe 2 years, and we don't want it to go down, we put it into these short-term investments, which are usually guaranteed or pretty darn close, and they are very liquid. Meaning you can get your cash within a day or so. Usually you can just write a check or simply transfer the money into your checking account at your bank. So you have a very low risk of losing principal. Another way of saying that is it low risk of default, low risk of capital loss. In fact, you know, no capital loss. Well, what have we learned so far? Low risk, low return. And they're now paying almost zero, folks. Some are paying zero. Huh? Well, for many years since the Great Recession, they were paying close to zero, if not zero. And then, and that was because the economy had just ground to a halt, and the Federal Reserve Bank, which is the prime director of what happens to short-term rates, just simply lowered them to basically nothing, much to the chagrin of people who were, you know, used to getting something from their savings accounts. But the idea was to make it easier to borrow money, make it easier for businesses to make it through the storm, and investors also. I mean, not just investors, individuals to make it through the Great Recession. And what happened is, as we'll see in one of the presentations, in 2015, the Federal Reserve Bank started raising interest rates ever so slowly. And they were raising them until, yes, 2020 when the COVID hit, and then back down to zero. So we like to say that the short-term investments, short-term instruments, cash instruments are where we park our money. And we also use these for an emergency fund, just in case the world goes into a crash or whatever. I like to, instead of the emergency fund, I like to think of them as our airbags. You know, if there's a crash, poof, the airbags go off, and we're basically cushioned from the blow. So let's take a look at the slide number 56 and the discussion of the stated rate of interest and the discount basis. Now, the stated rate of interest, sometimes called the nominal rate, is what we are familiar with. That's what we expect to see. We put money into a savings account or maybe a money market, and we're told we're getting 1% or 0.1% or 0.01%, and the money is added as a percentage. And they'll tell you, okay, you earned, you know, 5 cents this month. Yippee, hoo-hoo-hoo. Whereas the discount basis is something that we're not that familiar with. It's a little, takes a little getting used to, but it's really not that hard once you take a look at it. What happens is you buy the security, you buy the instrument, you buy the short-term investment at a price lower than its maturity value, than its redemption value, than its face value. And what happens is the interest accrues, which is a funny name, but that's what they use in accounting. It grows until finally the instrument matures and you get the face value. So this is how treasury bills, corporate paper, some savings bonds work. So for example, you buy a security now for $4,800. And then in 9 months, you get back $5,000. So your interest would be $200. Now you will be told what the interest rate is. You will be told the rate. But the cool thing about this is it allows these instruments to be sold, traded along the way on the way towards those 9 months. And as it gets closer and closer to 9 months, the value increases. So the person who bought it and then only holds it for 6 months can sell it and still get their interest. They don't have to wait for 9 months to get their interest. Does that make sense? Often people do. They wait till it matures, but remember, these are securities, which means they are easily traded. That's part of being a security. Cool? Okay. So, and there's a presentation that shows you some examples of short-term instruments, and you'll see it in Canvas, and it's on the website. And this is as we go through the face-to-face class, we often will stop and take a look at them. But you can look at them at another time or pause the presentation and take a look at them as we point them out. So, what are the risks of short-term investment? Wait a minute, Payano. You told me these things are risk-free or pretty darn close. Well, you're right. The risk of default, the risk of losing money, the risk of capital losses is none, basically, or almost none, basically none. Your principal is safe, often guaranteed. But no investment is without any type of risk. Short-term investments have the risk of losing purchasing power, sometimes called inflation risk. Because as you'll see, or as we saw in the second presentation, short-term investments barely keep up with inflation. We need to be able to do a whole lot better than inflation, or we're basically, you know, not making any money whatsoever. And then lost opportunity cost. What is this? Well, we saw a little bit of this in that second presentation where we saw the difference between what we received by investing in stocks for the long term, bonds for the long term, and those short-term instruments. I think they use treasury bills, which are one of the things we're going to talk about in a few minutes. So the opportunity risk, opportunity cost risk is very high. So don't let anybody tell you that an investment has no risk whatsoever. Sure, you're not going to lose your money. we know that. I mean, that's the reason we have short-term investments, because we need this money in 6 months, a year, or whatever. We don't want it to go down 20% overnight, which is what happens in the stock market. But if we're going to have this money for the long term, 5, 6, 10, 20 years, oh boy, are we losing out. We're losing to inflation, we're losing purchasing power, as it's called, and we're losing opportunity. Okay, and along the line, we hope you're going to, along throughout the semester, hope you're going to see the opportunity cost that is lost by keeping all our money in the bank and not saying, you know, I'm willing to take some risk, prudent, long-term oriented risk. We don't want to be speculators, folks. We don't want to try to trade our way to spiritual and material happiness, because we know that that's the loser's game, as it's sometimes called. And some people will win, but most of us, yeah, will lose. So remember that. And it's going to be on the exams. So don't get the question wrong, all right? The risk of default is very low, but the risk of inflation, losing to inflation, purchasing power, opportunity cost, those are very high over the long term with short-term investments. That's why we call them short-term investments. Slide number 58. Oh, here it is. Repeat after me. There is no such thing as a risk-free investment. You see, I try to get some audience participation going, but this is an online class, so I don't know how that works. 58. Deposit accounts at your bank or credit union. Savings, sometimes called passbook savings accounts. When you go to a credit union, they don't call it a share account, but that's legally what it is. They call it a savings account. But it's legally different. But to you and me, it doesn't matter. It's basically a savings account. And checking accounts that pay interest are actually called negotiable order of withdrawal accounts. But nobody uses that term. It's just a checking account that pays interest. And then banks and credit unions also offer money market deposit accounts. Now, remember we talked about the money market mutual funds? Yeah, when the money market mutual funds came out, I think in the late 70s, early 80s, late 70s, the banks and the credit unions said, well, we can do that too. But the cool thing, or the one thing that the mutual fund companies can't do that the banks and the credit unions can, is that they can guarantee your money market deposits. Whereas a money market mutual fund, as we'll see, is not, it's not guaranteed as a bank or a credit union, but it's pretty darn close. And notice that these provide the highest level of liquidity and are usually guaranteed up to $250,000 by the Federal Deposit Insurance Company for banks, insurance corporation, sorry, FDIC, and the NCUA, National Credit Union Association. But they're basically, they're government, they're sponsored by the government, so that if your bank goes under, for whatever reason, they make bad loans or somebody skips out with the money, which is not going to happen these days. It's very difficult. There'd have to be serious collusion between many individuals for that to happen. But the feds will swoop in. And what usually happens is the bank just made some really bad loans. And now those loans are non-performing or in default. And the feds will say to other banks, hey, we got, a bank here that's in trouble. Do you want to take it over? And some other bank will say, sure, we'd love to have their deposits and their branches and the like. And that's how it works. And by the way, it's $250,000 per bank. So if you're really, really that worried and you have a whole lot of money that you want to have in short-term investments, short-term bank accounts or credit union accounts, you just put $250,000 into one or three, five banks. I used to think, at first, without doing any research, I thought, well, it was just $250,000 per individual. But no, it's per individual per bank. So I was a little surprised about that. So you want your money to be safe? Put it in the bank. And the banker will be so happy and they will treat you so very well, because how do you know a bank is making money? Their doors are open, right? They give you 0.01% on your money or 0.1% on your money, and then they charge you 18 or 24% on the credit card that they use the money that you deposit in their savings account to pay. Yeah, that's why you want to be a bank when you grow up, really. And if you can't be a bank when you grow up, you could be a banker, or a financial representative, or a loan officer, or an insurance agent, or a mortgage broker, because the investment industry needs you. The financial services industry needs you. And we'll come back to this over and over and over again. Slide 59. What about savings bonds? I'm not big fans of these. But that doesn't mean they don't make popular gifts for newborns. They use that discount method, that accrual type security. You buy the bond for $50 and 180 years later. No, not 180 years later. Many years later, they are redeemed at $100. You don't pay any income tax on the interest until it's redeemed. Well, that's nice of them not to do that. Although there are some bonds that do. You don't get paid interest. They accrue, but you're supposed to pay taxes on that interest. We'll discuss those later on. And the cool thing about these is that they're free from state and local income taxes. Why? Because of the rule from the Constitution. The feds can't tax the states. The states and the local governments can't tax the feds. Plus, if you use them for higher education, the feds give you a break. So you probably have some of these sitting in a drawer somewhere that your aunt or uncle or grandparents gave to your parents when you were born, and everyone's forgotten about them. So go dig them up and use them now, and you don't have to pay any taxes because you could use them to pay tuition at Southwestern Community College. Cool? Yeah, I think so. But otherwise, they don't pay very well, and they make great gifts for newborns, right? And then the Series HH and the Series I bonds. Well, the Series HH are being phased out, but they do pay interest along the way. In juxtaposition, in comparison to the Series E bonds, but they're being phased out. Now, the Series I bonds are popular with people who believe that inflation is coming back. They've been saying that inflation has been coming back for the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, because it raged in the late 70s and early 80s, and then the Federal Reserve Bank put an end to that by raising interest rates until they broke the back of inflation, but they also created the worst recession since the Great Depression until 2008 and 9. So these things are inflation index. So they're guaranteed to outpace inflation. Yippee! But not by much. Again, if you use them for higher education, you don't pay any taxes, federal income taxes. And remember, you don't pay any state local income taxes because they're federal. And they only allow you to purchase $30,000 per year. Now, these last few, the Series E bonds, the HH, and the I bonds, are discussed in detail on treasurydirect.gov, which is your assignment, by the way. One of your assignments for this chapter is to investigate, research, familiarize yourself with treasurydirect.gov, which is actually a pretty cool website, folks. You and I can buy treasury bills, and treasury bonds, by the way, but we're going to concentrate on the bills in this chapter. We can buy government securities from the Federal Treasury at the same prices that the big boys and girls on Wall Street get. So I'm really proud of them. Remember, we love to complain about the government when they screw up, which they do often. But when they do something really cool, we should praise them, and so we do. Another feather in their cap is that the Mexican government copied treasurydirect.gov verbatim. In fact, I had the opportunity to meet the project director, the guy who was in charge of CETES Direct, right? I have the link on the website, and it's somewhere in Canvas. CETES Direct. And he basically said, oh yeah, we use treasurydirect.gov as our template, as our model. So you can buy Mexican government short-term securities, and I assume long-term securities, directly from the Mexican government. Very cool, very cool. So that's your assignment. And please listen to the commentary about the assignment. Please read everything about the assignment, because the information that you're looking up is not the important part of this assignment. The important part of this assignment is to experience what a prudent investor doing their sometimes called due diligence, their research about their potential investment. We want you to experience that. And as I'll say this in the commentary, as you're doing that research, we want you to analyze your emotions. We want you to look at yourself as you're doing it and see how you are reacting. I know it sounds kind of zen or something. It sounds like it's a psychology class. No, it's very important for us as investors, as prudent investors, to do our research. And if we enjoy doing that research, great. That's a great sign that we could be our own financial advisor. And if we absolutely hate it, if we would rather eat barbed wire, if it's the worst thing in the possible world that we could deal with, then it's probably a good idea to hire somebody. But neither is good nor bad. It's just check it out. And of course, maybe at first it might seem a little boring, and it will, because short-term securities are pretty boring. But don't worry, it's going to get interesting very, very soon with mutual funds and then with stocks. So don't worry. So let's continue. Speaking of treasury bills, here they are. The granddaddy, the safest, generally regarded as the safest of all investments, and what we discussed when we just talked about risk versus return, often used as the benchmark for the risk-free rate of return. What's the risk-free rate of return? I don't know. Go look up what a treasury, 3-month treasury bills are paying, because they come in 3 flavors: 1-month, 3-month, and 6-month maturities. And they are sold on the discount basis. You buy them at a discount and they accrue, A-C-C-R-U-E, until they are redeemed at their face value. And as we said, when a Federal Reserve, or federal government security is purchased, you don't pay any state or local income taxes. And as we also said, you purchase directly from the Treasury direct.gov website. Very, very cool. So this is your assignment. This is your assignment. Check these guys out. And if you look at the, when you look at the presentation on examples, you're going to see tons of these Treasury bill examples, and you're going to see them also, tons of them on treasurydirect.gov. Now, what if you don't want to buy treasury bills? You'd rather just stay with your local bank or credit union. Well, then you will probably want to take a look at certificates of deposits, especially if you know how long you have until you need the money, because they typically are 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, all the way up to 5 years. Now, why would you bother putting your money into a CD, a certificate of deposit? Well, because they're going to pay you a higher interest rate than if you put it into a money market account or a savings account. But what's the catch? There's always a catch, right? There's a penalty for early withdrawal. If you know you're going to need it in 6 months, great. You can eke a little bit more interest out of the CD than if you just put it in a savings account. But what if you need it before the 6 month? Yeah, they're basically going to steal all your interest. So be careful when you buy these things. They are insured up to the same $250,000 per investor per bank. And some are brokered. They're sold by brokerage firms. They usually offer higher yields, and these can be traded prior to maturity without incurring the penalty. Now, why would a bank go to a brokerage firm to get them to sell their CDs? Because the bank or credit union is in need of cash. They're basically trying to get some marketing folks, because the brokers make money, right, off of this. Either you pay them a fee or the bank pays them a fee. And they're trying to raise cash because they have certain what are called capital requirements, capital reserve requirements. And if they need cash, they got to go out and scrounge it up. They got to go out and get depositors. So the brokers help them do that. Now, you have to be careful, because unless you specify otherwise, the CDs will automatically roll over. So you have a 6-month CD. At the end of 6 months, there's usually a 2-week, I think it's 2-week time frame where you can get your money out of the CD. If you don't do that, they'll automatically roll it over, which means it'll be stuck in there for another 6 months. So you can specify, you can say, look, at the end of the 6 months, I want that money to go into my checking account or my savings account. And they'll say, okay. So be careful about that, okay? Don't let them roll over. Unless you really want them to do it, then just don't say anything and they'll do it automatically for you. CDs, the certificates of deposits. And the next time, well, you're going to research it. That's the other part of the assignment. But next time you go into your bank, look around you'll see a poster that says, check out our CD rates, check out our certificate of deposit rates. They're pretty pitiful right now. They're worse than pitiful. They're awful. Yeah, but that's part of COVID and the Federal Reserve trying to kickstart the economy, doing the best they can without much help from the Congress. Oh well, politics. Poly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. Okay, slide number 63. Commercial paper? What a silly name. Well, these and their cousins, the banker's acceptance notes, which we'll see on the next slide, are not usually something that you or I get involved with. Why is that? Because notice that the denomination is usually $100,000. They're sold in multiples of $100,000, and they want you to buy 25 of them or 50 of them. They don't want you to just buy one. So these are short-term unsecured promissory notes issued by corporations with very high credit standing. So if you're a company like Walmart or General Motors, you can go to the commercial paper market, the short-term securities market, and say, look, we need some money. We need $90 million for 6 months. Will you lend it to us? And they create these certificates of, I'm sorry, these corporate commercial paper. It's not paper anymore, folks. It's all electronic. And people buy them, 90 days, 180 days, 270 days. Now, why are they, why are they use these time frames? Well, because if they keep the maturity less than 1 year, then they don't need to be registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. As soon as you go to a year, then you need to essentially create bonds. You need to treat them as if they were bonds, which is another world. And it's more expensive to do it from the company standpoint. So assuming you don't need the money for the long term, this is a short-term bridge loan for companies that have that kind of stature. You know, smaller companies usually can't get away with this. You have to be a company that's bona fide, that's been out there, that has a reputation as some, you know, they'll look at your credit rating, which is not done the same way our credit rating is. We'll discuss that later when we get the bonds. So that's commercial paper. And on the assignment, I'm going to ask you to see if you can find a quote for commercial paper. And I'm going to tell you, it ain't easy. Why? Because, you know, it's just not that much of a need for the general public to know about these things. You're not going to find a quotes as you will for stocks or even bonds. Bonds are harder than stocks, but stocks are very easy. And the treasury bills are easy on treasurydirect.gov. But these things are not that easy. Why? Because people who buy these things are either working for a mutual fund or a pension fund or a life insurance company or a bank, or they are working for very wealthy investors, in which case the investors have, you know, they have their own private broker. So if you walk into a brokerage firm and ask, hey, you got any quotes on commercial paper? You know, their eyes will light up and they'll say, oh, please sit down. Yes, get the coffee. You gotta get the... And then when they realize you're doing it for a community college introduction to investment class, they might not be, they get out of here. But really, they should think, you know, long-term and say this person could become a long-term customer. So that's commercial paper. Now, what if you're a smaller company that doesn't really have the prestige that of the larger companies? For you, we have on slide 64, banker's acceptance notes. You go to a bank, one of the large, you know, banks that you've, many banks you've heard of. Some of them you haven't heard of that cater right to companies. But, you know, the Wells Fargo's of the world, the Bank of America's of the world, JP Morgan Chase's. And you say, look, you know, we need $30 million for 6 months or maybe just 30 days. Can you lend it to us? And so what the bankers do is they will give these people what are called banker's acceptance notes. They are short-term, low-risk investment vehicles arising from bank guarantees of business transactions, often for international transactions. And they're sold at a discount. You know, they're usually not quite as good as a CD or commercial paper, but that's because the bank's getting a lot of the money. And the the minimum usually, again, is $100,000. So the company that's, you know, maybe, you know, they're a large company, but they're not a company that everybody knows about. They go out into the investment community and say, hey, we got these bankers' acceptance notes. Will you buy them from us? And this company says, investors say, sure, because it's backed by Wells Fargo or Bank of America or whatever. So it's basically corporate paper for the companies that are not really large and can get the corporate paper on their own. So they're basically cousins of the commercial paper. Cool? But again, for you and me, no, they're not something that we are going to invest in because we don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to plunk down in a short-term investment. So now, the one that I think for the vast majority of people is the best choice, in my humble opinion, is the money market mutual fund. Why? Because every mutual fund company has it. You probably are going to have a mutual fund account at a mutual fund company, or you might have mutual funds at a brokerage firm, and you can buy money market mutual funds at a brokerage firm. So they're just easy for us investors. This is a mutual fund, and we'll discuss mutual funds in detail in the next chapter, but we've already saw that a mutual fund is an investment that pools the capital of a large number of investors and uses it to invest, but in this case, exclusively in short-term securities. Whereas we saw some mutual funds invest in stocks, some mutual funds invest in bonds, and we'll discuss these in detail next presentation. But virtually all brokerage firms, all mutual fund companies offer them. Now, unlike the money market deposit accounts from the bank or the credit union, these things are not guaranteed. So there's no Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. There's no National Credit Union Association that's going to backstop you. But don't worry, because if there ever is a default, other companies step in and bail out the investors with the blessings from the government, of course. There was a situation in 2008, and if you're really interested in this, you want to look it up. It's called Breaking the Buck. Just type in Breaking the Buck into any search engine, and you'll find dozens and dozens of articles about this. In 2008, when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, it was September, right, when the government allowed Lehman Brothers to fail. Check it out. There's lots of books written on this. The Big Short. What's another good one? There's lots of good stuff on this. The two money markets that had a lot of the commercial paper from Lehman's broke the buck, which means they lost a penny. Well, one of them lost a penny, and one of them lost three pennies. And when that happens, everybody stands at attention and goes, oh my goodness, who's next? So there was a huge rush for people trying to get their money out of money market mutual funds. Where are they going to put it? In a bank. That's dumb. It's just, they're going to invest in the same fund. It doesn't matter. I want my money out of there. I'm worried I'm going to lose a penny. Well, what happened is the Federal Reserve Bank, the Fed, came to the rescue and said, don't worry, for the next 6 months, we will backstop any money market mutual fund. And it really did calm down the mutual fund, the money market mutual fund industry, or just money market. So they did a good job. And remember at this time, I don't know if you remember, it was, now 12, over 12 years ago, but people were scared to death. We were looking at the abyss. I remember people who I consider, great investors just saying, we're going to get through this, but maybe not. And I'm thinking, yeah, we're going to get through it. And they're thinking, maybe not. Maybe they know more than I do. But we did. And then they did it for another 6 months. March comes around, whatever it was, March. And they said, we'll do it for another 6 months. So after September of 2009, they didn't have to backstop it again because things had calmed down quite a bit by then. And the really cool thing about money market mutual funds is that they're just so easy. You can link them with your checking account at your bank. Often they'll give you checks. Now, they don't want you to use them, to go to the bank. I mean, not to go to the grocery store. They want you to use them for major purchases. Or if you ever need 10,000 bucks, and you just write down 10,000 and put it in your checking account for those people who have that much money lying around in a short-term investment account. But this is the one that I think is the most useful. But they're not going to pay as well as CDs, right? They're typically not going to pay as well as CDs. So in that respect, you know, if you think you want to eke out a little bit more cash, a little more interest, a CD. But what's the difference? Right, the CD has a time requirement. The money market mutual fund doesn't have a time requirement. So, slide number 66. Which short-term investment is for me? Well, commercial paper, backing your acceptance notes. No. Savings bonds, make cute gifts for newborns, yeah. And, you know, if you really want to buy treasury bills, they come in $1,000 increments, and you can buy one of them. You know, if you go to a brokerage firm, I want to buy one treasury bill, they're kind of going, oh, go away, you know. But the treasurydirect.gov says, no problem. We'll take your $1,000. And yet you don't pay $1,000. You pay, and now you pay $999.99, and you get a penny after 6 months. I don't know. No, it's a little better than that, but not much. Certificates of deposits are okay for those that are sure that they will not need the money until maturity, but I find that the preferred choice, at least for me and for others that I talk to, are money market mutual funds. It's just a very easy place to park your money, especially since every bank, credit union, brokerage firm, mutual fund company offers them. But, you know, a lot of non-investors still use a savings account at a bank because they haven't taken this course yet. So you decide. So now the emergency fund debate. This is a slide I stole from Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. Many financial experts, self-appointed on the television set or the internet, recommend that households create an emergency fund of 3, 6, or even 9 months of income. Well, you know, I don't agree with this. As long as you have access to cash, a line of credit, home equity line of credit, credit cards in the worst case scenario, I don't think it's a good idea to keep $25,000, $50,000 or more sitting in a savings account earning 0.01%. I would use that money to pay down interest debt, especially if you have credit card debt, because you can always run it back up again. But now you are adequately insured, right? You got insurance in case something bad happens. But there are exceptions. If you're a salesperson, you're self-employed, you get laid off often, then you really do need an emergency fund, folks, especially when times are good, because you'll get people who get into the mortgage broker business, or they start selling cars or whatever, selling sales, cell phones or whatever, and business is good, right? And they're making a pretty good salary, and they figure, okay, well, I guess this is my salary. I'll set it up accordingly. No. The recession hits, all of a sudden, you know, cars aren't selling, or people are hanging onto their cell phones or whatever you're selling, or your self-employed business all of a sudden hits a lull. Think about all those poor individuals who have restaurants. Oh my God, your heart goes out to them. We keep going to this one restaurant. We want them to stay in business and getting takeout just because we love them so much, and we would just break our hearts I'll plug Ortega's in Ocean Beach. It's some really good Mexican restaurant. It's very good Mexican food, but we try to go to other places too, because, you know, we're not really going anywhere these days. So why not go out and get some takeout and bring it home? So there are exceptions for people who really do need an emergency fund. But for the most part, if you got a decent job, if you were to be laid off, you would be able to get another job fairly quickly. I don't think you need to keep 50 grand or more sitting in a savings account earning 0.01%. Ugh. Slide 68. Okay, so here we are checking for comprehension. What are mutual funds that pool the capital of a large number of investors and use it to invest exclusively in short-term securities? Right? What are these? Commercial paper, money market mutual funds. Yeah. In fact, you usually don't hear people use the term money market mutual funds. They just say money market. They don't bother saying money market mutual funds. And their counterparts at banks and credit unions, money market deposit accounts or money market accounts, have rates that are close to CDs, but without the early withdrawal penalty. So that's cool. What are savings investments in which funds must remain on deposit for a specified period? Normally a penalty for early withdrawal. Right. These are the CDs, the certificates of deposits. If interest rates are going down, the cool thing about a CD is you can lock in that rate. So interest rates are going down, and you know you're not going to need the money for 6 months. You can lock in a rate at 6 months, for 6 months, and even if interest rates go down, you get to keep that rate. Most CDs also have this, they call it the bump. It's just a silly name. But say you get a CD and interest rates go up. Well, darn. Well, many will let you bump once or maybe twice. So after 3 months or 6 months, depending on how long your CD is, they let you adjust the interest rate upward once or twice, which is a nice little perk that the banks and the credit unions give you. Check that out. What are short-term unsecured promissory notes, IOUs, issued by corporations with very high credit standing, normally sold in $100,000 denominations, commercial paper, money market mutual funds, passbook savings accounts, or certificates of deposits, commercial paper. Commercial paper and their cousins, bankers' acceptance notes, are normally only purchased by institutional investors such as money market mutual funds, pension funds, life insurance companies, and the like. And then, what is a guaranteed demand account at a bank or credit union that normally pays very little interest, but will often be offered with a toaster or waffle iron, which makes it all worthwhile? Right. Passbook savings accounts. And, you know, I've come across people when they learn that I, you know, supposedly know what I'm talking about when it comes to investments, and they'll tell me, well, I got $500,000 in the bank in my savings account. And I just go, oh, well, are you going to need this anytime? Oh, no, this is my, you know, this is my retirement savings. I want that money to be safe. And I just think, well, you know, fine. You know, it's your decision. And then I tell them about wonderprofessor.com and that they can learn how to invest prudently, wisely with a long, forget it. Forget it. That's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. But in the case of short-term investments, don't put a ton of money here, folks. Learn where to put it for the long term, prudently, realizing that, yes, there's going to be times when it falls, but you're going to do okay if the world doesn't end. If the world ends, it doesn't matter where your money is. People say, what happens if the world ends? I want money in the bank. If the world ends, you can't get in the bank. Yeah. Oh, well, forget it. Anyway, so you got it? You got the different types of short-term investments, huh? So we want you to study these. Obviously, you need to know what they are, but that's all you need to know. What we've learned here and what you're going to learn as you go snooping about doing the assignments are all you need to know about short-term investments. Okay, and those problems that we just saw, that's similar to what you'll see on an exam. That's why we put them there. Now, slide number 72, who controls short-term rates? Now, if you are so inclined, you can start digging into the role of the Federal Reserve Bank, often called just the Fed. They are the banker's bank. They're responsible for setting short-term rates. Now, many people will say horrible things about the Fed, and you know, nothing's perfect. Certainly, you know, nothing we humans have created has ever been perfect. But one of the problems the Fed has is they have two objectives which are diametrically opposed to one another. They are trying to keep full employment, which means, you know, if there's money to be made, we want people to make it. And at the same time, we don't want prices to get out of hand. We want to keep inflation in check. And the problem is, not always, but in general, these are often at odds with one another. If you try to promote full employment, sometimes inflation can get out of hand. But it's not always the case that it happens. And so it's not an easy job. The Federal Reserve Bank was designed to be independent and not subject to political pressures. Yeah. Throughout the years, different presidents and different politicians have done their best to cajole and to influence the Fed. You know, not in a public way. Not, you know, until we got to the outgoing president, who, Agent Orange, who is has been very unkind to both Federal Reserve chair individuals, the one who was in when he got in, and then the one he chose. He's been really nasty to him, too. So check out, if you're so inclined, if the politics of this entice you to learn more, there's a pretty good article. But there are dozens and dozens of articles. If you just type in Federal Reserve pressure, president, just you'll see. It's not an easy job what they have. Their job is to try to keep the economy humming and along as best as possible and keeping inflation in check. And it sometimes it's a very difficult thing to do. And what they've done now is they've made it so that money, short-term money, is essentially free. And that has done some good and it's done some bad, too, because companies have basically said, hey, we can borrow at hardly anything. Let's go borrow a ton of money. But when you borrow money, you got to pay it back. And hopefully you'll have the money in the future to pay back. So we'll discuss that later on when we get to bonds, because bonds are basically like short-term investments, but they're long-term investments. So there's a whole different set of characteristics that we have to take a look at. But it's not that hard, is it, folks? No, I don't think so. Go over it once or twice. Make sure you know what each individual category is. But let's get these darn things out of the way. That, dear students, is our first chapter where we've discussed an introduction to investments, an overview of the investment universe, risk versus return, the time horizon of your investments, and short-term investments. So what do you think? So far, so good? Not that difficult, isn't it? Is it? I don't think so. Remember what Mr. Warren Buffett says. Investing is simple, but it ain't easy. So in our next chapter, we are going to discuss what is arguably the most important type of investment for the vast majority of us working grunts, and those are mutual funds, investments for the masses. So we'll see you, dear students, in chapter 4, our second chapter, mutual funds. Be awesome, bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College, study hard, and we are always so grateful for you, so proud that you are with us. See you.